This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
When the worst happens, then we also see the best of America. So, you know, what happened in Charlottesville, you know, a few days afterwards, you saw a peaceful protest or kind of memorial for the people that were lost. And you see more people like, what can we do? So, you know, it gets darker before it gets brighter. But I do think that the worst that Trump is bringing out is also bringing out the better in people. And I think the same is applicable for the actions taken in climate change. I think that the more that he tries to deny it, the more that unfortunately we'll see disasters like Hurricane Harvey, but the more also we'll see people step up to the plate and tackle these challenges that we have.
I don't know about you, but I've been feeling the need to hear something good, hoping that someone can tell me about positive accomplishments, in spite of the powerful forces working to undermine progress every day in this country. Our guest this week on Sea Change Radio, Gilbert Campbell, the co-founder of Volt Energy, is here to remind us that sustainable energy is good, not only for the earth, but also for business. Campbell's company, based in Washington, D.C., builds and operates solar projects, electric vehicle charging stations, and offers energy storage solutions. We discuss how Volt Energy's business model works, why there are not nearly enough minority-owned businesses in the renewable energy space, and the challenges of interacting with a new administration that's openly hostile to science and minorities. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by the co-founder and CEO of Volt Energy, Gilbert Campbell. Gilbert, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you for having me.
So in a nutshell, explain the business model of Volt Energy, if you will.
Sure. I guess the core part of our business is solar development. So what does that specifically mean? We work with commercial clients like the Cheesecake Factory, universities like Howard University and Wake Forest University, and a slew of other commercial or like nonprofit clients in getting solar energy. But most clients understand that when, you know, you're used to buying, getting a regular bill once a month and they pay the bill. With solar, you could be talking about transactions, a couple hundred thousand dollars, upwards of like $several million. So most commercial clients aren't used to spending, you know, that kind of money up front for electricity. So the solar industry several years ago realized we had to come up with a mechanism to match how customers are used to buying electricity. So what we offer is called a power purchase agreement, or a PPA. Again, that's a power purchase agreement. And what that basically means is, let's say a solar project putting solar on a university is $5 million. As a company, we invest that $5 million to buy the solar panels, all of the rest of the equipment, and to get it installed. And we also maintain the system over, usually it's a 15 or 20 year term. And then the university I'm giving an example for, they will buy that power at a specified rate, which is traditionally lower than what they're currently paying the utility company. But it's no upfront capital expenditures for the university or the company. They get an immediate day one savings utilizing clean solar energy. So does that make sense?
Yes, yes. We actually did a piece a couple of years ago with Tim Dickinson of Rolling Stone, who had written an article about Florida and people trying to change the laws there, which had prohibited things like power purchasing agreements and other similar solar initiatives in one of the largest states in the country. Why don't you explain some of the ways that your business is still trying to get across some of the red tape when it comes to the power purchasing agreement environment?
Sure. There's some states where, and not even just some states, there's some utility companies within certain states that do not allow power purchase agreements. There's a workaround which is similar to what you see in the residential market, which is a solar lease. The solar lease looks very similar to a PPA, but the difference on a PPA, let's say, you know, the rate, just given a hypothetical number, is 7 cents a kilowatt hour is what the PPA rate is with, let's say, a 2% escalator per year. Then the client is paying based on how much solar is generated times, you know, the 7 cents, okay? Well, the solar lease, because you can't charge based on actual production, you charge based on estimated production and a predetermined rate. So you come up with, just like a traditional lease payment, a set amount that's paid upon in a fixed period of time over 20 years. The risk for a developer like us is, well, let's say the solar outproduces, our estimates were traditionally a little bit conservative, then we potentially could have lost some money. And then conversely, for the client on a solar lease, you know, let's say it produces a little less, then they have a set amount that they're paying. But usually it usually works out pretty well. So those are just some of the common, you know, things that you may have to deal with in an area where you can't offer a PPA and it's got to be a solar lease in lieu of a PPA. Some of the other constraints that we deal with is most states have what's called a renewable portfolio standard, which requires that the utility companies buy a certain amount of clean energy. And there's a carve out for solar. So in states that have an aggressive renewable portfolio standard with a carve out for solar, tend to have more solar. And what we found is, you know, some of the, you know, not every state has good solar policy. So it makes it very challenging when we're, you know, trying to offer our clients a competitive PPA price. If the state A is not a good state with renewable portfolio standard, and B, if there's a low cost of electricity, it's hard for us to offer our clients a competitive price for solar that makes sense for them.
And you're based out of the Washington, D.C. area, but why don't you explain where Volt Energy is currently operating and maybe kind of give us a sneak peek of what your plans are for expansion?
Sure. We're nationwide. Most of the projects that we've done a lot in the Mid-Atlantic, Maryland, D.C. We've completed several projects in California, Colorado, North Carolina, and probably about three or four other states I can't even think off the top of my head. But again, it kind of goes back to states that really make sense from an investment standpoint for solar, both from our standpoint, but also from our customers. Now, from an expansion standpoint, our business model, you asked earlier, is, you know, our primary business model is offering solar via solar development via the PPA. But we've expanded our business capabilities because our clients, some of them may not be able to have solar based on the way that their buildings are structured or where they are geographically. So some of the things that we've kind of expanded to via partnerships is with providing electric vehicle charging stations. We're doing that. First project, we'll be providing electric vehicle charging stations. Actually, will be at Howard University in Washington, D.C. And then we've also formed a partnership with a company called GridPoint that provides energy management as a service, which basically we're allowing our customers to get a deeper dive into energy analytics to make intelligent decisions, but also utilizing smart controls to manage things like thermostats and lighting to, you know, kind of utilizing the same financing mechanism as a PPA, where we invest the upfront cost to put in all the smart controls and devices. And then they pay for their services via the savings. So, you know, our core is really just providing clean technology solutions with innovative financing mechanisms for our clients.
And can you tell us what inspired you to start the company with your co-founder, Antonio Francis?
Sure. Never had an idea that I'd be co-founding and running a solar energy company. My background, always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur since my days. I went to Howard University for undergraduate school. Didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. So I picked a career path, and I was blessed to have wonderful mentors starting working at Accenture in their strategy group, because it gave me an opportunity to interview C-suite executives like CEOs and chief strategy officers to help them solve business problems and take advantage of new business opportunities. So did that for several years and was able to kind of, you know, think through the lens of, like I said, C-suite executives. But then I realized I needed to have some sales experience if I eventually wanted to run a company. So I worked for several biotech companies, Genentech being one, doing biotech sales for several years. My business partner, Antonio, we went to undergraduate school together and been lifelong friends since undergrad. And then he had a family member that was vice president of sales for a company out of Denmark that makes wind turbines. So in 2007, when green energy was not hot, you know, it was mostly people considered hippies from the past, reached out to us and said, "Hey, I know you guys both have experience in business development and sales. Can you help us with, you know, like kind of doing outside sales?" And we said, we need to learn a little bit more about it. You know, we don't really understand it. So we went to a lot of clean tech conferences in 2007, 2008, in DC, in Jersey, in New York, in California. And again, we were very fortunate to meet a lot of the pioneers of the industry. One individual in particular, Scott Sklar, who founded SEIA, which is the Solar Energy Industries Association, our main lobbying organization. And they really took us under their wing because, A, it was younger blood at the table, and then also, you know, a diversity as far as kind of what we represent, just to help us. And then as we learned more and more about the technology, it just made sense because you're doing right by the environment, and you're also helping, organizations, nonprofits, universities, and we don't do residential, but even if you look at residential, homeowners save money. So if you can, you know, save money and do right by the environment, it's a win-win. So it gave us purpose, but also we saw, you know, a business opportunity where it made sense as well.
If I had my way, I would move to another lifetime. I'd quit my job, ride the train through the misty nighttime. I'd be ready when my feet touch ground, wherever I come down. And if the folks will have me, then they'll have me.
Any world that I'm welcome to,
I say.
Any world that I'm welcome to, any world that I'm welcome to,
is better than the one I come from.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Gilbert Campbell. He's the co-founder of Volt Energy. So Gilbert, you were discussing the diversity at Volt Energy, and you and your co-founder Antonio are both African Americans. Why don't you explain the landscape for minority-owned green energy companies, and why it's unusual to have a minority-owned company like yours?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that I would say is definitely sad as far as, you know, as long as we've been in the industry, that there's not a tremendous amount of minority-owned kind of clean tech companies, and same is applicable for women. When you look at employment numbers, the jobs are growing. I look at solar, for example, exponentially over the last few years, but even still, like, diversity numbers and aren't what they should be. As far as from an ownership standpoint, I think part of it is just a lack of not, I think the industry could do it's a new industry. So it's not mature as other industries that have outreach to find diverse owners. So I think that, as more companies get into the space and as the industry gets, you know, people have a better grasp of what does it mean to be in clean tech or be in solar or be in the EV market or be in storage. I think that you'll find more entrepreneurs of color getting into that market space. But right now, it's just unfortunate that there's not a lot. And some of it can be a lack of access to capital. But a big part of it is just not a big outreach as much as it should be to communities of color, to be honest with you.
You mentioned the lack of access to capital. I don't know if that pertains to Volt Energy in its early days, but can you maybe give us some examples of some of the challenges you and your colleagues face being a minority-owned company, and then maybe some of the advantages it may have?
Sure. And I don't know. I mean, part of it is minority-owned. I think part of it is just small business, but starting out, you know, our parents did very well. They were able to, you know, to put both Antonio and I through school. You know, we brought up in middle class families. We didn't struggle, but neither one of our, you know, both of our parents, so we don't have like rich uncles or aunts that could stroke a, you know, a check for seven figures for us to start the company. So when we started the company, we took out a line of credit. Antonio, myself, and the third business partner who's retired from the company at this point in time, and that was kind of what we used to start and pay our, you know, our basic operating expenditures. We kept very thin and lean. And then again, we were fortunate over time, you know, nothing's easy, but to be able to grow, start to get some contracts and some revenue going in. And we just reinvested that into the company. And we've been able to attract investment for projects, for individual projects. So, but again, it took us the long road, but, Yeah, I think that's the challenge with a lot of small businesses, minority and just majority-owned companies. You know, it's a lack of access to that initial seed investment, whether it's an angel investment or just the basic working capital that's needed to start a company and to scale a company. But one of the good things with this industry is if you're able to get out and get started and build a name for yourself and you get a client that signs, you know, a 20-year agreement or power purchase agreement, it's pretty easy to go out to the financial markets and get financing. So it's hard in the beginning, but once you get up and running, then, you know, I think there's a tremendous amount of opportunity in this industry. And I think the second part of your question, you know, what advantages are there for being a minority firm? It's not necessarily an advantage. There are a lot of challenges, but on the positive side, there are a lot of organizations like Green for All, which was founded by Van Jones, that are out there helping minority-owned businesses in clean tech, kind of amplifying their voice and providing opportunities and providing access to capital. So I think just having an understanding, if you're a minority-owned firm that's looking to get into clean tech, there are support groups that can help you. As a company, our door is always open. You know, we love to see more people of color and women get into this industry. So please feel free to reach out to us at any time. We're happy to share our network, the things that have worked for us, the things that haven't worked. And yeah, it's kind of one of my passions as well. I do a lot of panel conversations, interviews, kind of talking about what are the barriers to entry, how do you get into it, you know, how do you grow a company in this space. So you know, again, there's, so the positive side, there are resources that are out there and there's people that want to see you know, people like us and others succeed in this industry.
And Gilbert, you mentioned some of your clients like the Cheesecake Factory, but maybe you can dig a little deeper into some of your projects and give us an idea of which ones are the most rewarding and why.
Sure. I mean, we've been very fortunate to have a wide range of clients. Some of them have been very large organizations, and we love all of our clients. So we didn't say, you know, we don't like one client more than the other, but when we look at the impact of some of the projects that we've done, it's been some of the smaller projects that don't have the most revenue, but we made a bigger impact with those projects. I'll give you a specific example. We've done several church projects, one at Florida Avenue Baptist Church in Washington, D.C., and one recently at the 19th Street Baptist Church in Washington, D.C. And in both those projects, we were able to help the church save a significant amount of money, but also help them implement a green ministry. So, you know, we have seminars where we bring in members of the church and walk them through how to read their utility bills, understand what are some of the local incentives that they can invest in for renewables or energy efficiency, and just have a better understanding as far as what's going on with climate change and what can they do both at home and in their respective workplaces. So that's been great. And then the other thing is we've done a lot of work with a lot of universities. As I shared before, Wake Forest University, Howard University, we're currently doing a project with. And in both instances, we've been able to get students involved to understand, you know, how do you design a solar system? What are the finance, you know, like for the financial modeling that goes into it, see if a project even pencils out? You know, how do you go about doing the installation, the asset management, all those kind of things? So getting students engaged now, to be able to understand, like, hey, there's opportunities for me to start a company, or I can go work for a company in a new industry. And that kind of goes back to what we talked to in the beginning of this interview is, you know, how do you get more minorities and women in this industry? It's exposure. And I think both those projects that I mentioned, the church projects and university projects, have given us an opportunity to provide people with additional exposure. And that's been very rewarding.
I noticed on your site that Volt Energy was recognized by the U.S. Department of Energy and the National Minority Development Agency, which is an agency of the Department of Commerce. These are governmental organizations that are built to recognize and help companies like yours succeed. But we're in a new era. We have a president who seems to be openly racist and also openly disdainful of clean energy and solar efforts. How do you think that's going to affect your business? Or do you think there may be a reverse backlash on the heels of the horrors that just occurred in Charlottesville?
Yeah, so it's a lot to address. I will say we definitely miss President Obama, who opened a lot of doors and really, you know, just created smart policy to grow the green economy, and then, you know, and also to make an inclusive green economy by, you know, highlighting firms, not just us, but other firms in the space as well. since 45 is taking office has definitely been a challenge on several fronts. I mean, it's hard to fathom that the president of the United States doesn't believe in climate change. The fact that we pulled out of the Paris Agreement is disheartening. So I think from that vantage point, just our moral leadership in the world on issues such as climate change is lacking. As far as the direct impact to our business, it's to be determined. To your point, I do see more and more of, as I shared, our clients are like, you know, big Fortune 500 companies and universities, where I think they're realizing that they're having to do more with the absence of leadership from the White House. And because they're multinational corporations that exist not just in the U.S., but in other parts of the world, they understand that climate change is real. Their customers and their employees and their shareholders are requiring them to take steps to mitigate climate change and invest in technology like solar, wind, geothermal, and other forms of renewable technology. So we haven't seen that drop off from larger clients as far as their interest in renewables. The same with, you know, with homeowners, is continuing to see more people investing in solar. Where President Trump can have a negative impact is one of the things that was extended in during President Obama's administration at the very end was the investment tax credit, which has helped to spur solar development across the country. It's a 30% federal tax credit, dollar-for-dollar tax credit for investments in solar. It's to be determined whether or not with the new tax bill that they're working out, will that repeal some of the tax credits that have really helped to grow the solar industry? And I really hope that President Trump does not do that for several reasons. Number one, the solar industry is growing at a lot faster rate than pretty much any other industry. It's growing, I think, 2.6 times the national economy. So when you look at that and you look at where the new jobs are coming from, they're coming from industries like solar. The solar industry is employing more people from a generation standpoint than oil, gas, natural gas combined, and coal combined. So why would you repeal back and try to take a step backwards if you're supposedly the president is focused on jobs? So that's where my concern lies. And then you mentioned Charlottesville, just an atrocity. President Trump is bringing out the worst in people, of a certain segment of people. But if we look at even like what's going on with Houston, when the worst happens, then we also see the best of America. So, you know, what happened in Charlottesville, you know, a few days afterwards, you saw a peaceful protest or kind of memorial for the people that were lost. And you see more people like, what can we do? So, you know, it gets darker before it gets brighter. But I do think that the worst that Trump is bringing out is also bringing out the better in people. And I think the same is applicable for the actions taken in climate change. I think that the more that he tries to deny it, the more that unfortunately we'll see disasters like Hurricane Harvey, but the more also we'll see people step up to the plate and tackle these challenges that we have.
Anger, he smiles, towering in shiny metallic purple armor. Queen jealousy envy waits behind him. Her fiery green gown sneers at the grassy ground. Blue all the life-giving waters taken for granted. They quietly understand. Once happy turquoise armies lay opposite ready, but wonder why the fight is on. But they're all bold as love. Yes, they're all bold as love. Yeah, they're all bold as love. Just ask the answer.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Gilbert Campbell. He's the co-founder and managing partner of Volt Energy. So, Gilbert, you also are an advisor to the United States Department of Energy's Minorities in Energy Initiative. Now, we just had Daniel Kamen, a professor at UC Berkeley, who just resigned his post. He's a special envoy special science envoy to the State Department, and in the wake of President Trump's reaction to the Charlottesville protests, he resigned. It's kind of a tricky balancing act for companies that want to do the right thing. They want to be engaged in their government and in the process of good policymaking, but they also don't necessarily want to be complicit with an administration that seems to be sticking their head in the sand on key issues like climate change. How does a company like Volt Energy proceed in that environment?
Sure. Let me first clarify. So the work that we did as far as serving like on panels and being advisors, that was under President Obama's administration.
Right, right. So if you were asked by the Trump administration to do this now, would you?
We would not. We would not work with the Trump administration. And I'll explain why. Like anything else, we were, you know, giving him an opportunity when we first came into office to see how he would, you know, govern, if he would pivot from, you know, the way he was campaigning to, you know, being a president for all. And the reasons that we could not work with the Trump administration would be his direct disregard for climate change. If you look at what's going on at the EPA, the good people that have left EPA and basically trying to shut down the EPA for all purposes sake, the denial of science, it's just not stuff that we believe in. And then you add the second component of it with what happened in Charlottesville and cozying up to white supremacists. It's just not. It's not a leader that we can get behind, and we would, you know, that we would want to attach ourselves to working with. And it's sad. And we're talking about the president of the United States, who supposedly should be the leader of the free world, and you know, we don't feel comfortable engaging with his administration.
No, I don't think I would either. It's abhorrent, and who wants to be associated with these values? So, in the face of all of this darkness, what areas do you see as being sunnier?
No pun intended. Great question. I mean, the vast majority of Americans are good people. I mean, you know, want to see to leave, you know, to basically earn a decent salary, do better for their children, leave future generations in a good position. So when you talk about climate change, that's an intersect. I mean, you're talking about things that impact people now, but also leaving a better planet for your children and your children's children. And climate change also can help address providing good jobs. When you're talking about solar and wind and clean tech jobs, the green economy provides high paying jobs. So I think one of the things that keeps me optimistic is that there's opportunity for people that live in the Rust Belt or in the Deep South that are red states to get on board with the clean energy economy. And there needs to be a better job of outreach too. I mean, people that used to work in coal jobs and other jobs that have gone away, they haven't seen the boom in solar as states that, you know, are a little bit more of your blue state. So I think that one of the things that we have to as an industry is reach out more and build broader coalitions to provide people with ladders of opportunity for work, but also tie in that how the work that they're doing is important for our environment and for future generations. So I do remain optimistic, because when things do get dark, we always rise above.
He's the co-founder of Volt Energy, Gilbert Campbell. Gilbert, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much, Alex. It's been a pleasure.
Sway the future to the past and find what will
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Rufus and Chaka Khan, Steely Dan, and Jimi Hendrix. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.